Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellefson with the Digital Education Podcast, doing a special series, posting daily because I've been blessed with some great friends and great people in education who want to help and want to share and want to prompt our thinking forward. And the series is What's Next? We're in this distance learning, remote learning, whatever anyone wants to call it. But right now, I think I've gotten to that place where I just want to share a small tidbits and small pieces of wisdom or thought that prompts our thinking for what comes after. And today I'm with Shannon Burke and Chris Everett. Shannon is the CEO and founder of Engage to Learn, and Chris is culture design strategist. So Shannon, I'm just going to throw it to you because I'm really interested, based on what you're thinking, based on where you're at, and based on what you see, what's next?
Well, that is such a great question to be asking people, Eric, and thanks for having us on to be thinking about that as well. First, I would say, I think if anyone answers that question 100% confidently, they're crazy, and I definitely don't feel like I know exactly what's next. But in an attempt for us to look at that, I took our organization through, because we do support districts, and so we do have to try to think about that and be as strategic and forward thinking about it as possible. But I took our organization through some future scenario planning. So we looked at, you know, four alternative futures, because again, I don't think anyone knows exactly what's going to happen. And so we looked at four alternatives, you know, based on what might happen with the economy and what might happen with the pandemic, and kind of cross-reference those in a matrix and then try to look at all four of them and think based on that, you know, what are the commonalities that we see regardless of which way these things go? And so I think from that, it gave us some really good perspective. And we've to inform this perspective, we've also been in contact with all of our partner districts, which is quite a few folks in leadership positions that we're, and you know, listening to and talking to. And I think there's short term and long term. So short term right now, I would say, as this context continues to change, people are now thinking, okay, are we going to go back to school this year? And if we are going to go back to school this year, what does that look like? And then are we going to, you know, the next thing is chronologically, okay, are we going to do any professional learning this summer, you know, to get our folks ready for next year? And if we are, what is that going to look like? And then, you know, then when it comes to, I guess, mid-range, which is the fall, it's like, okay, when we go back to school in the fall, are we going to be in person or are we going to be virtual? And I think the number one pain point probably for everybody, and it was something we actually talked about on the very first day of this, is how do we mitigate, you know, combat the learning loss? Because despite heroic, admirable efforts, and it has been an amazing effort for all of these districts and parents and families to, you know, put this virtual schooling at, you know, distance schooling up in a short amount of time, we all know that it, you know, it's not going to be quite the same in terms of achievement that we would have had, the learning that we would have had if we were at school. So, you know, the big question for us was, you know, the pain point of how do we mitigate the loss of that time, and especially for our most vulnerable students, how do we mitigate that? So I think what's next is being very strategic about how to ensure, whether it is virtual or in person, or, you know, that we use these next few months to really get very strategic about how we mitigate that learning loss for our most vulnerable students while still engaging students who may have had a pretty decent at-home learning experience over these weeks. How do we truly personalize and differentiate and try to make sure that achievement gap does not widen and mitigate that as much as we can? I think there are a lot of other things that educators are thinking about, like prom and graduation and, you know, all those other kinds of things as well, for sure. But from an academic standpoint, a learning standpoint, I think that's the number one, you know, that's the number one focus, really important focus too.
I would just add one thing to that, I think, and it's more of a hope for what's next. Obviously, whether folks were hyper prepared or realized they weren't prepared at all for this kind of thing, I hope the conversation when folks really get back into it in starting now would be, what does the experience need to look like? The ultimate benefit of this whole experience, right? Where, how can we develop more autonomy into our students' learning experience? Because the reality is that's what's being required of kids right now, is quite a bit of autonomy. Because parents like myself, even though I'm educated and work in this education field, I'm not able to spend every second sitting next to my girls as they're working through the content that's been prepared for them. So one, having a really differentiated experience is required and needed, but also just that capacity building for them to be able to work through that and problem solve. What I hope for next is that we all think, how do we build that into whatever the situation looks like, right? Whether it's we're all face-to-face again like normal, how do we build in those capacities for life, ready skills in a real, authentic, meaningful way every day, so that, you know, no matter what they face moving forward, what we all face moving forward as a community, kids are even more prepared to deal with that. I think that would be a really meaningful benefit of everyone having to go through this together, because we can all kind of think about how do we move that forward together in a powerful way for kids.
Well, let me ask one clarifying question, Shannon, if you've got it, and Chris, you can add to this too, is Shannon, you'd mentioned professional learning, and I had the opportunity to go visit one of your partner districts, you know, last year, and just saw the amazing work that was happening at that district, and with those schools, and you talk about professional learning, and so much of it is relational engagement. It is working together. It is the stuff of us. Like, what do you think people are kind of learning and will take with them through this time? And then what would be some of the, maybe what would be the encouragement that you'd give people to say, hey, you know what, keep going in this direction, or here's something that maybe, you know, you can keep doing, but you may just have to think differently about.
Well, I love the quote, you know, there's opportunity in adversity. And the other thing that I think is really applicable in this time is that constraints fuel creativity. So, you know, those two things I feel like have happened, and that's definitely not to you know, downplay that I know a lot of people are in pain and there's a lot of suffering and no doubt about that. And, you know, that hits every family. It's already hit our family, but I do think there's opportunity in adversity. And I think there's already been a couple things that have happened. One, we've seen some gaps, right? That Chris mentioned autonomy. We've seen some gaps where we see that from a learning standpoint, many of our learners were not prepared in terms of owning their own learning experience, to where when they were away from the teacher physically, you know, they could set goals for themselves, create a learning plan, and go through a day, you know, researching and grabbing things aligned to the standards to really facilitate their own learning. And you mentioned going to one of our schools, and that's a primary thing that we focused on for many years, because we feel like that's a life-ready skill. You need to be able to be autonomous. We joke about, you know, you want kids to be able to move out of the basement, and you know, that's true. And the key to that is being like owning that experience for yourself and being able to problem solve and work through that with a very structured process, like a goal setting, to-do list, you know, some key time and project management tools. So I think that gap has become clear, and for our partners, they've said that the framework for that they already knew and had already taught to their students and teachers, that carried them through. I mean, we've literally had people coming to us and saying, our whole community is embracing this framework that we've been using, this learning framework we've been using, because now parents are seeing the value even more of, you know, kids having a structured process to go through that they own themselves. So it's just a matter of giving them resources, and they know how to structure their own learning. They don't need somebody to make a schedule for them. They know how to do it. And I'm talking about kindergarten, you know, on up, they know how to follow a process. And so I think Chris mentioned this as I hope, and I certainly feel the same way. I hope that one of the things that comes out of this is professional learning around how do you build in, you know, more of that learner ownership, agency, engagement, autonomy in the process so that, you know, they're not so dependent on in a teacher setting. And by the way, that doesn't mean the teacher's not important. The teacher's more important than ever because they're freed up now to meet individual needs and, you know, and address, work with individual students and help them get, you know, help create those accelerate folks that need, you know, learners that need help and also help people, you know, advance beyond. So they can meet individual needs if they're freed up from a whole classroom and they've created that autonomy for that structure to be put in place. So I think that is a huge gap that we saw and that professional learning around that needs to happen. I think the second thing is understanding that this is an ongoing support thing. So once again, you know, a couple days of training could not get folks ready to launch virtually. It's just not possible. And that's just not the way the brain works. That's not the way professional learning works in adults or kids. So it's about ongoing coaching that can truly provide professional learning job embedded so that people over time, as you're learning something like this, you can, you know, you can incorporate it in. And, you know, we were able to thankfully convert immediately. We've actually already conducted, Eric, it's been kind of cool, two virtual collaboratives with 10 districts or more collaborating virtually on site on a platform because there were trainings that were already scheduled. And we said, hey, let's just do them virtually. So we did, and it's worked really well. And people have been very pleased with it and excited about how that then can inform their training for this summer so they can do it virtually. We're actually going to hold a free summit that we're going to share out on May 11th and 12th with everybody. How do you conduct a virtual professional development if you're not going to bring your people together in person this summer so we don't lose that opportunity? But then we've done virtual coaching. Since this started, we just immediately turned it over to virtual coaching. We were able to give our clients more days because we could convert all that travel money to actual money for, you know, working with people virtually. And the reception has been amazing. Like people who are struggling with that conversion to online, getting that support as they're going through it, have just said it's been invaluable. So I think, again, lessons learned in terms of, can we be more efficient in the way we're doing professional learning? Can we convert a lot of that to virtual now? You know, save districts money, spend, you know, quality time, save travel for everybody. So there's some good learning from that too, how you can convert that professional learning to something more efficient, more effective.
So Chris, can I ask a question real quick? Because I always like asking you the culture questions. And in regards to even what Shannon's talking about, as you coach and as you embed some of this, like what would be a tip for a boss who has all these people now all scattered all over the place? What would be a tip for a boss to encourage, like you're building a culture with inside your building or with inside your district. What would be a tip for a boss that says, hey, here's how we can continue to build that culture so that when we return to a place we've built it, but, and we continue to foster it, but what's a tip that you might have that says, hey, you know what, here's a way in which you can do that virtually, or here's a way in which we're seeing that people are desiring it through this new kind of way of living right now?
Well, I think it's a really important thing for leaders to consider is how they continue to build intentionally the culture that they want. It's crazy times. One of the encouragements that I would give districts that, or really the whole system, is this change has been rapid, right? Decisions have been made. They're pushing out all kinds of change, which change is hard. But I think the encouragement is they're all doing it, right? So it should, as a leader, I think, if I had one tip to give, would be to say, look at what we're doing. So you can carry that, right, that momentum into whatever the future looks like, whatever is next. We together can rapidly change anything we want, meaning we can iterate. It could be the opportunity to get the educational system out of this idea that it takes a lot of conversations to get any kind of incremental change. We can do big things together, which is exciting, right? Because we, as a system, we kind of universally talk about the need to change or to improve, but it just takes so many conversations, right? We have a partner who I love, and they are historically slow to change things. Like they take a lot of time talking, but they've realized they don't need all those conversations. They need a few key conversations, and then they need to inform everybody. and communicate really clearly. And man, they have rapidly shifted a lot of stuff that would have just taken forever, before. So I think the one tip is to just be encouraged that they are doing great things as a team. And just that recognition, just that acknowledgement of the effort and the reality of just how much they're accomplishing, even in spite of really how much there is left to do, I think is a great way to build that connection to everyone. I mean, through that adversity, great teams are built. And it's powerful when the leader really acknowledges that. Shannon does an amazing job with us. There was some late nights spent by a lot of people creating a lot of resources, shifting really a lot of process to be relevant to the context. And every meeting starts with, a celebration of effort and an encouragement of persistence in that toil to some degree, right? So that everybody feels like, yes, we're in this together. And those campus principals with their teachers, district leaders, is a great opportunity to build that kind of team culture during this time together.
Shannon, Chris, I look forward to sharing this with everybody and just kind of prompting thinking. Thank you for your time. Really appreciate the work that you do. And for me, the opportunity that I get to be, as a colleague in this work with you.
Thank you so much for asking the important questions, Eric. It's great. It helps people to think and reflect on these things and then sharing that information out. I think it's what you're doing is really very valuable during this time. So thanks for being that provocateur.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Great to talk to you again.